You're listening to Clinical Conversations. Treatment de-intensification, scaling back treatment in the face of reaching or exceeding therapeutic targets, is our focus today. JAMA Internal Medicine has just published a study examining the likelihood of de-intensification among older diabetic men receiving therapy for hyperglycemia or hypertension. The first author of that study, Dr. Jeremy Sussman, is our guest. He's with the Department of Internal Medicine at the University of Michigan and the Veterans Affairs Center for Clinical Management Research, both in Ann Arbor. Welcome, Dr. Sussman.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
If you'll indulge me, let me try to oversimplify your results. Using National Veterans Affairs data, you studied two cohorts of diabetic patients, primarily men, aged 70 or older. One cohort was under treatment for hypertension. The other was under treatment for hyperglycemia. You found that the likelihood of de-intensification of therapy for either of those conditions did not differ much among those achieving or exceeding blood pressure or hemoglobin A1C targets and those who didn't achieve or exceed them. Is that a fair characterization?
Yes.
Okay. Would you add anything to it?
One is to emphasize that these were all patients with diabetes, even the ones who we were looking at their blood pressure treatment.
So, remind us of the dangers of over-treatment in these circumstances.
Yeah, so in many ways, the inspiration behind this project was in part the ACCORD trials. These were large, high-quality, NIH-funded randomized trials that were published back in 2008, where they took people with diabetes and treated them to either a very low blood pressure, under 120 was the goal, or a very low hemoglobin A1C, under 6%. For both of these, their logic was, you want to make people as much like healthy people as possible. And they were both hoping that they'd save a lot of lives with these trials. And in fact, both trials found the opposite, particularly the glucose control trial, where in fact there was a higher rate of mortality for people who were treated to a low hemoglobin A1C than to a moderate hemoglobin A1C. And then in the blood pressure trial, there was a higher rate of adverse events, although no change in mortality. And so now we have a situation in diabetes care where we know very loose control is dangerous. We know that if people don't get basic blood pressure drugs, basic diabetes control, that's both short-term and long, but particularly long-term, dangerous. And we also know that very low values are dangerous. But a lot of the infrastructure, a lot of the clinical push that we're receiving has really only focused on half of that, preventing under-treatment. And we were wondering if maybe there's been such a focus on preventing under-treatment that we've been causing over-treatment.
And so what did you expect to find? You said that, I believe in your introduction, you say that de-intensification has not been measured before. So yours is the first large-scale study of that?
Yeah, and so there has been some work showing potential over-treatment. So we know, for example, that older patients, both in the community and also within the VA, do sometimes have these very low values of hemoglobin A1C and very low blood pressure. What we wanted to know is, what do the docs do about it? Do they make any changes on the basis of seeing these numbers?
Yeah.
And our answer, of course, was usually not. We were also wondering, are there specific factors that make them more likely to make those changes? So, for example, a patient with a very short life expectancy is not going to get the benefit from diabetes treatment that someone with a longer life expectancy. Mm-hmm. Do doctors take that into account? Similarly, slightly low values versus very low values. Do doctors act differently when they find someone with really low hemoglobin A1C versus only moderately low?
And speaking of hemoglobin A1C, so the likelihood measures that you give in the paper for people who whose hemoglobin A1Cs were not low was about 17 or 18%. That was the rate of de-intensification of treatment in that mm-hmm. Subgroup. Those with moderately low hemoglobin A1Cs, their chances were slightly higher. They were at about 21%. But for those who had very low, and that's probably under 6.0 or under, there seemed to be an effect there. I mean, their chances of de-intensification were about 27%. So I guess there's a significant difference between the 17 and the 27%, but still that leaves about 63% or 73% of patients with very low hemoglobin A1C measures who treatment was not de-intensified, right?
And the part I would emphasize with that is people with A1Cs that are, by any reasonable measure, totally reasonable or even high, 17.5% of them stop taking a diabetes drug in a given six-month period. These aren't people who are being stopped because the doctor's worried about their being overtreated. These are happening for some other reason. So you have that baseline of 17.5%. So in fact, only about 10% of people were stopped because their values were so low. If you're going to have 17.5% as a baseline and 27 at a level of a hemoglobin A1C that's very low, that's really, you know, the marginal difference is fairly small. The other thing I should emphasize with this is we were only looking at people who were treated to get to these levels. If someone had a hemoglobin A1C of 5.9 on no drugs, we're not calling them overtreated. And in fact, if they got there from metformin alone, we didn't include that either, because there are a lot of good reasons why someone might be on metformin, and because they're not going to have dangerous hypoglycemia. So these are patients who are older, and therefore have higher risk of side effects, lower chance of benefit, and were treated at least somewhat aggressively to get to these very low values, and the docs usually weren't changing on the basis of it.
On the other hand, there are dangers of de-intensifying treatment, and to the patient, the danger to the patient is, as you measured, there was not much harm in de-intensifying, was there?
That's right. So one thing we wanted to know is maybe the reason the doctors aren't making changes here is because they know something that we don't. Maybe they know that, oh, this is a one-time thing, and I'm really worried that 6 months from now this patient's going to be back high again. And so we said, all right, what does happen in the next 6 months? So for those patients who weren't de-intensified, the ones who were kept on that strong therapy, we said, hey, what happens coming up? And what we found, in fact, is the large majority of patients, those values weren't even checked. So a hemoglobin A1C, by most guidelines, should be checked at least two to four times a year. And for patients who are potentially dangerously overtreated, I think it's logical that you would check at least that often. And the large majority of patients, in fact, did not have an hemoglobin A1C even measured in the follow-up 6 months. And well under 1% had a value that was actually high.
Right. So
so that wasn't happening, yeah.
Yeah, so of those who were measured, it was less than 1% had reverted to a high level.
Yeah.
Okay. And the other thing, the other danger, is not a clinical danger, but a kind of a professional danger, isn't it? Because there are quality measures that may be at play here, that clinicians are worried about not hitting quality targets if they de-intensify. Is that right?
That's right. Oh, I should point out, ironically, the VA, in hindsight, was really wise with their quality measures, which was we never at VA said very low values for quality. The measure was always under 9%. And so these patients were safely in that level.
Yeah.
That said, a lot of providers don't always seem to know that, and they were regularly worried about low quality measures, about losing quality credits, even though they were safe with it.
In the same issue of JAMA Internal Medicine, there was a research letter. I looked at the authors, and there is that letter shares an author with your paper.
Yes, those are colleagues of mine. Yeah. I know the person pretty well.
And so they surveyed VA clinicians, right? And they said, okay, so let's take a theoretical case of somebody with a hemoglobin of 6.5% hemoglobin A1C, and who's prone to hypoglycemia. Are you concerned about that? And so describe the results.
Yeah, this was a great study that was intended to be complementary to the one that you and I are discussing now, where they ended up getting 600 responses from VA primary care physicians, and they gave an example of a patient who was meant to resemble the sort of patient we're studying in this study. And it was someone who was on a sulfonylurea drug and had an A1C substantially under 7. And then they asked, what would you do about this? Would you make any clinical changes? And why or why not? and they found that almost half of all providers would not make a clinical change in that circumstance. And when they asked why, they found some interesting answers. 40% said that they worried that 42% said that they worried the A1C would fall outside of current performance measures, which of course is a sad reason to do something that you might think is the right thing to do, to avoid making that change because you're worried about performance measure, and is even more unfortunate given that they weren't even right. The performance measure was quite far away.
Yeah.
20% were worried about the potential for litigation. Again, perhaps I'm wrong. I hope no one's going to get sued for doing what we think would arguably be better care. And 30% were worried that they wouldn't have time to have the discussion.
Ah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Trading off time for effective treatment sounds a little scary. It says something about the state of clinical medicine, the way the mania for throughput, I guess.
Yeah. Right? We're busy people, yes.
Yes, okay. So what do you recommend, Dr. Sussman? I mean, I think one of those recommendations is adding de-intensification to performance measures, right?
I think so, yeah. And that's something we're working with within the VA. And we're also in discussions with some non-VA organizations about what it would look like to do something like that, yeah.
So you're talking to a colleague who's a little skeptical about de-intensification of therapy. And so what's the most persuasive argument that you have found, beyond performance measures and, don't be silly, litigation's not going to happen if you're treating well. What do you say to them?
I think the first thing to remember is that for diabetes care, unless someone's really high values, unless their A1C is 10, 12, 13, the dangers of overtreatment, of excessive work that we're having the patients do, of drug side effects, those all happen any time, whereas the benefits happen in the future. You're not going to be preventing someone from developing diabetic retinopathy or neuropathy over the course of a year or two. That's something that's happening over 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
And so as a patient gets older, if they haven't developed those problems already, the chance of that benefit only decreases, whereas those harms only increase as the patients end up on more drugs, so a greater chance of polypharmacy. Diabetes often gets harder to control as someone gets older. All those things only become harder, and the benefits only become smaller.
Better to hold back now with the aim of you could intensify in the future
if you need to, yeah.
Okay.
And relatedly, clinical needs change with time. As people get older, they often eat less, maybe they're losing weight, and so in fact, what diabetes medicine they need will almost always change, which actually is an opening. You can say, let's actually think about these, and maybe the treatment that made sense 5 years ago might not now because of clinical changes in your patient or because of new information in the research literature.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Sussman, for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was podcast 188. The other 187 are all available for your perusal or commentary at podcasts.jwatch.org. Kristen Kelly is the executive editor. We come to you through the NEJM Group. This is Joe Elia thanking you for listening.